This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal, with my very special guest today, coming live to you from the vicinity of Boston and Madison, Wisconsin. Brian Stavely has his own radio show. I had a great pleasure being on with him for 3 hours, a little over a month or so ago. We had a great time, and I thought it would be terrific to have him come on and for us to discuss 9/11, at least in part, and what he agrees and what he disagrees with what I've had to say, including on his show. Brian, it's a real pleasure to have you here on The Real Deal.
Thanks, Jim. I'm really glad you invited me on. I'm really glad I got to speak to your audience as you did to mine.
Yeah, it was a real pleasure. I mean, 3 hours, that's a kind of a luxury. It was terrific doing that.
Oh, yeah. We're talking 9/11, man. I could go 5 hours. You know? There's so much to talk about, you know.
Why don't you tell everyone where they could find the show online? It's The Real News, right? The Real News.
Anybody that wants to find the show that me and Jim did, just site, and that's therealnewsonline.com. And if you go in the radio archive and just scroll down a little bit, you'll see the show. And I even have a link there to the. I set up a little web page to follow along with the show because we discuss certain evidence, certain pitches, certain videos, stuff like that. That's all still up there for everybody.
That's one of the catches with doing 9/11. The visual evidence is so terribly important.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's, you know, you really do have to be able to show people, you know, what you're talking about a lot of the times because let's face it. A lot of the stuff that happened was fakery. I mean, we might disagree on how much of it was and exactly how it was done, but I mean, the videos and the pitches are so telling in this event. You know, maybe more than any words can describe. So,
two of my favorite illustrations are from the Pentagon, Brian, where they had that one piece of fuselage, which actually did come from a Boeing 757. It doesn't show any signs of having been involved in a violent collision. It doesn't show any signs of having been burned or singed. And it has a piece of vine that was snared in it when it was ripped off the plane, where the crash has been traced back to Cali, Colombia in 1995 by a fellow, an attorney, James Hansen, from Columbus, Ohio. I mean, it's that bad, Brian. They save up a piece from a wreck that occurred in 1995 to dump it on the lawn of the Pentagon in 2001 to make us think that a Boeing 757 actually crashed there when no such thing had happened.
Oh, it's absolutely absurd to think that a Boeing 757 crashed there. You know, I'm glad you addressed the Pentagon because that's something that I think we overlooked a little bit the last show. I mean, if you just even just think about, you know, never mind the fact that they have supposedly had like 84 cameras around there and they only give us like one video, which is absolutely ridiculous, a video that doesn't really show anything. To think that this plane, the 757, had an inexperienced pilot on it that just got in the cockpit, was able to fly the thing so well that he actually hit the front of the Pentagon without even, if you look at the grass and stuff, I mean, it's not even like cut, it wasn't even like cut up from the plane. It's like the thing came in at a perfect angle, like just skimmed the top of the grass and right into the face of the building. And I don't think people realize how ridiculously hard that is to do. I mean, that must be insulting to some pilots out there.
Well, you know, as Gerard Holmgren was the first to observe, based upon Bureau of Transportation statistics, in other words, the government's own records, neither Flight 11 nor Flight 77, where 11 allegedly hit the North Tower, 77 the Pentagon, were even scheduled that day. And from FAA registration records, which I have in hand.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know, Brian, and from FAA registration records I have in hand, it turns out that the planes associated with flights 93 and 175 were not deregistered or taken out of service until 28 September 2005. So how can planes that weren't even in the air have crashed on 9/11? And how can planes that crashed on 9/11 have still been in the air 4 years later?
I've got a video. I've got a video here. I don't know if we have. Do you have a chat or something on your site, right?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe I'll throw it in the chat for people. I mean, yeah. We have a video, and you can't trust anything that comes from the media. Obviously, I mean, they're all, you know.
Tell me about what's in the video.
The video, it just shows that Flight 175 is still in the air. An hour or two after the South Tower was. I don't know if you've seen that one.
Pilots for 9/11 Truth has done the most brilliant work because, you know, just as you're suggesting, that they determined that Flight 93 was in the air that day, but that it was over Champaign, Urbana, Illinois after it had allegedly crashed in Shanksville. And just as you're pointing out, that Flight 175 was also in the air that day, but that it was over Harrisburg and Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, long after it had allegedly hit the South Tower. I mean, how bad is this, Brian? I mean, how blatant can they get?
Oh, it's real blatant. And I just put the video in the chat for everybody right there. They can check it out. It's I forget what exactly news channel it was. It says there on the banner. It's too.
Well, the chat actually, but the chat we have here is only my own, so you only actually got it to me. But maybe you can put it up on the real news.
No, I did. I put it on the revereradio.net. That's where.
Oh, did it? Oh, wait. Good for you. Good for you. Clever fellow. Excellent. Good work. Good work.
Yeah. So if people just check that out, you can see the what the newscast is doing. He's trying to show some new fancy plane radar tracking system that they have or something, and he's talking about the World Trade Center being hit. And what he's talking about is how they supposedly grounded all these other flights. And look, there's only three planes in the air. And if you zoom in, it's a little blurry. It's a little hard to see, but when they zoom in, if you zoom it in on the video, because it shows the little information underneath each plane when they put the cursor on it, this jackass puts the cursor right on the plane, and it says Flight 175 UAL 175 right on it with its speed and its longitude and latitude.
Really, Brian? Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah. I love it. That's absolutely wonderful. Boy, pilots will just be thrilled with that kind of vindication. I mean, you know, they've done such brilliant work. The other story from the Pentagon that I like so much is that when later in the afternoon there were rumors that the Capitol would be next and all the members of the House and the Senate poured onto the steps of the Capitol building, they looked across the Potomac and they saw this billowing black smoke. And it occurred to me that that was very odd because the two lime green civilian fire trucks had extinguished the very modest fires right after the alleged crash had occurred. It didn't take them more than 15 minutes. So I was trying to figure out where all the smoke was coming from. And when I tracked it down, it turned out to be emanating from a series of enormous dumpsters right in front of the building, Brian. I mean, it was incredible, just incredible. I mean, it was that blatant.
You're talking about the Pentagon?
Yeah. That series of enormous dumpsters where all that black billowing smoke was coming from.
Yeah. I mean, it's just ridiculous the amount of fakery on the day. I wanted to know what you thought about just the story. You know, before we even get into the pictures and the videos, which we will get into in a few minutes, and I know that'll take up a lot of time. I just want to know, I mean, how people really believe a story that four people on an airplane with box cutters could hijack an airplane. I mean, I wouldn't even let somebody carjack me with a box cutter. I mean, a box cutter? That's not even like having a steak knife. I mean,
that's ridiculous. Right. It's not even like having a steak knife.
Yeah, Jim, think about it like this. If these are supposed to be experienced military pilots and stuff. Now, if you've got four guys taking over an airplane, they're probably spread out a little bit, you know, watching the passengers, keeping an eye on everything or whatever. The passengers are buckled in. Why wouldn't the pilot just tilt the plane real quick and knock these guys off their feet, and then some people would get up out of their seats and just bury them?
Yeah. I agree. At the American Scholars Conference in June in you know, organized by Alex Jones in June of 2006, we had this panel discussion on Sunday, which was covered by C-SPAN. And the speakers were Stephen Jones, who was a professor from BYU, and I'd invited to be my co-chair when I founded Scholars in December 2005, Bob Bowman, who has a Ph.D. in nuclear engineering from Caltech and who was the director of the Star Wars program under Reagan and Ford, and Webster Tarpley, who's one of our leading experts on covert ops and so forth, and the author of 9/11 Synthetic Terror Made in the USA and Me. And when it came to my turn, I talked about the my top 10 reasons that the hijackers were fake. And one of the points that I made was that if this had actually happened, these red-blooded Americans would have beaten them to death with their luggage.
Yeah, I mean, a box cutter. I mean, they could have at least made it a better story and, you know, made it sound like, you know, to the people that, you know, I mean, there's going to be the people that believe the official story, but the people that don't believe the official story, they could have thrown a story out there that, you know, maybe the FAA was in on it and somehow, you know, these guys, not the FAA, the TSA is in on it and, you know, these guys got guns through somehow or something. That'd be more believable.
But there wasn't actually even a TSA then. That was all post 9/11, you know, all that rubbish, which was made blind.
Yeah, whatever the security would be at the time. They could have made a story like that and made it a little more believable. I mean, box cutters. And then to think, not only did that happen, but it happened on four different airplanes on the same day, and not one of these pilots thought to tilt the plane, or not one, you know. I mean, these guys would have got beat down. A box cutter is nothing. I mean, if they're going to swing a box cutter at you, you could smash them with a laptop. I mean, really.
That's right. And as you say, a pilot could just, you know, do a little swerve with the plane, you know, just tilt left, right, and knock them off of their feet so they could be overcome by passengers. I mean, it's a ridiculous story. And, of course, Elias Davidson, who's a very meticulous scholar, has been able, you know, has established the government never proved any of the hijackers were aboard any of those planes. A.K. Dewdney, who's a professor of computer science from Western Ontario, has shown that it was impossible to make those calls with cell phones. And even 757s in 2001 didn't have airphones at all, which was very embarrassing for, you know, the Ted Olson, our then Solicitor General, when he claimed that he'd received these phone calls from his wife Barbara and then couldn't explain how they were even made, and where the FBI has now concluded that there was no call that was connected between Barbara Olson and her husband Ted. And then David Ray Griffin has followed up by establishing that all the alleged phone calls, all of them, were faked one way or another.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's just a ridiculous story, and I also think that it was a, you know, it's kind of an insult to pilots, you know, that they would just let their planes be so overcome. And I guess, you know, none of them punched in the 4-digit hijack code. They've also got weapons in the cockpit. I mean, there's an axe in there, isn't there? An axe and a fire extinguisher in every cockpit.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yes.
And so what did these guys do? Knock at the door? Hey, we got box cutters. Open the door. We're gonna kill everybody. I mean, come on, man. Well, you could open the door, and as they're coming through, smash them with an axe. I mean, you got an axe. They got a box cutter. That's like not even being in a knife fight. Like, that's an insult.
Well, Brian, the whole thing is an insult. The whole story is an insult. And yet the American people were sold it. Hook, line, and sinker. We have to understand nothing the government tells us about anything of importance can be taken at face value.
No, not at all. Not at all. Not any part of that day. So in your conclusion of as far as the airplanes go, I think we agree on the fact that all four plane crash sites were faked.
Yep, no doubt about it.
I mean, we're going to get into what we disagree with about how some of them were fake.
Sure.
You would agree that all those people that were supposedly on those planes did not die on those planes. That
correct.
Day.
That's absolutely right. And there weren't any hijackers aboard any of the planes because they were phantom flights, or they didn't crash.
Yeah.
I mean, it's completely ridiculous.
Yeah, It is completely ridiculous. I mean, just the whole box cutter thing drives me crazy. And then to think that, you know, airline pilots, I don't know how much money they make exactly, but, I mean, they make good money. They get paid good money for a reason, because it's very difficult to get in the cockpit of a 757 or another similar type of aircraft and just be able to fly the thing. And these inexperienced pilots were able to hit 3 out of 4 of their targets with the airplanes that they hijacked with box cutters. I mean, come on. What American guy is going to sit there knowing that these guys are hijacking your plane and trying to crash it, or maybe trying to crash it? Maybe at the time they don't know what they're going to do while they're hijacking it. But who's going to really stay in this seat and not go at these guys? 7 minutes.
I can't talk right now. I'm on the air. Yeah, no, I know. I know, Brian. It's absolutely unbelievable. To continue with the Pentagon, of course, at the hit point, the alleged hit point, which is only about 10 feet high and 16 or 17 feet wide, there's a couple of automobiles, chain link fence, unbroken windows. There's no massive pile of debris from a 100-ton airliner. There are no wings, no seats, no bodies, no luggage. The tail isn't there. The wings aren't. Not even the engines were recovered, Brian. I mean, how can anyone believe this fakery? Brian, are you there? We seem to have lost Brian all. Here we go. The case of the Pentagon is really quite striking because for all those reasons. Brian, are you back? For all those reasons, completely fraudulent, though it appears that a plane actually was flown toward the Pentagon and then flew over it. So what we have here is a case of a lost guest. Here he calls. Here he comes. Brian.
Jim, my Skype's acting up. Do you think maybe I should call in on the cell phone so it doesn't...
No. Stay there. I got you now. We're on the air.
Okay, I just feel bad because I would have me a couple times. Again, I'll call in. It'll be a 978 number. You'll see.
No. Stay right here. We're doing fine. You know, I think there may
be... Now, what was the last point you were making
about? I was just talking about how the Pentagon at the hit point... There was no massive pile of debris from a 100-ton airliner, no wings, no tail, no bodies, no seats, no luggage. I don't know if anyone doesn't realize not even the engines were recovered. I mean, it's completely disgusting that anyone should believe that a plane, a Boeing 757, hit the building. Although, Brian, it does appear that they flew a plane toward the building. I have... A good friend of mine from JFK Research has a trucker buddy who was in front of the Pentagon at the time and who told my friend, whose name is Roy Schaefer, that he saw a big plane fly right toward the building and then swerve over it. And that appears to have been what they did at the very time they set off explosives in the front of the building.
Now, if they faked the four plane crash sites, that would bring the death toll down at least by about 250, 260 people, if my math is correct. I mean, there were about 50, 60, 70 people per flight, and then you add up four flights. Do you think there's a chance that maybe some of the deaths at the Pentagon could have been exaggerated?
Well, there weren't any deaths from any airplane crashes. There were 125 casualties at the Pentagon, about 36 or three dozen of which appear to have been accountants, budget experts, and so forth, who appear to have been brought into that wing of the building at the direction of Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld with all of the documents and records from the missing $2.3 trillion to make sure that it would all be destroyed. I mean, that seems to be, you know, one of the principal reasons for attacking the Pentagon in the first place. And, of course, they set it up in this wing, the only wing of the building that had been massively reinforced. Here we go again. We are having a game played. This is a bit much, but maybe, you know, someone doesn't want us to have this conversation. So... I'm getting Brian back again. I asked my friend Roy Schaefer if we could get his friend Dave Ball on the air, and Dave was reluctant to do it. So I got you. You there, Brian?
Yeah, I'm here, Jim. Sorry about that. It seemed to have some issues with Skype on my end. I'm on my cell phone now. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can hear you now. Yeah, but...
All right, good. I was having a real problem hearing you. I mean, I was only getting about half of what you were saying for a few minutes. It was pretty aggravating.
Okay, I'm sorry.
What was the last point you were... Where were we at? What was the last point?
I was talking about this trucker buddy of a friend of mine named Roy Schaefer. His buddy's name, Dave Ball, was a trucker in front of the building. I want to get him on the air. And when Roy approached him, he was reluctant to do it, and I told Roy, well, tell him that he's much better off, much safer, once he gets his information public. And when, you know, he tried to get back to Roy, I mean, within 2 weeks, he was found dead in an abandoned building.
Oh yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. No, I remember what I was asking you. I was asking you, you know, since the people on the flights were faked, do you think that maybe the deaths at the Pentagon could have been faked, at least some of them? If, you know, I'm not saying all of them have to be, but do you think some of them, do you think it could have been exaggerated? Do you think the building couldn't have been evacuated before it was, you know, they did anything to it at all?
Well, of course, they knew it. They knew that a plane was approaching, but, you know, presumably it was this plane that flew over the building rather than hit it. But, you know, Cheney was being told by an aide in the White House underground bunker, in which Norman Mineta witnessed, that a plane was coming in and it was, you know, 50 miles out, 40 miles out, 30 miles. Does the order still stand? And Cheney got ticked off at him and whipped his neck around and said, of course the order still stands. Have you heard anything to the contrary? Where the order had to have been to not shoot down the plane. I mean, shooting down the plane would have been the obvious thing to do. You lose the plane and the passengers, but you don't also lose the personnel and property at the target. And yet Cheney allowed it to happen. And there was a C-130 pilot, too, Brian, who was circling, who, when the, you know, I told the BBC that I believe that the debris, which was not there initially, I mean, we have all kinds of photographs of no debris long after the fire, very modest fire, has been put out. And there's no debris there at all to speak of, and yet it starts showing up later. I suggest it had to have been dropped from the C-130 circling the building. So BBC interviewed the guy. His name was O'Brien, the pilot, who said he was insulted at such an insinuation. But, you know, I don't care about the insult. I'm more interested in the truth. I don't know that he actually even denied that it was true, but it had to have been how it was done. You couldn't have had officers and enlisted men rushing out there on the lawn with all of this, you know, to plant this debris. So,
well, could it be Cheney? I know about the Cheney-Mineta exchange that you're talking about, but couldn't that have been, I mean, obviously there were a lot of people on the inside that knew what was going to happen that day, and Cheney would obviously probably be one of them. But couldn't it be possible that they just floated that conversation? I mean, I know they had the conversation. I've seen the video. But couldn't it be possible that they did that just to make it so the deaths in the Pentagon were more believable?
Well, look at it this way, Brian.
Isn't it possible that maybe there weren't people in there?
Well, look at it this way, Brian. They wanted to get rid of all the evidence and records related to the missing $2.3 trillion. And there were about three dozen experts who were related to that, which included accountants, financial experts, and budget analysts. And it was very much in their interest to take them out. You know, I mean, I think that was a principal reason for the event, was to destroy all those records and the experts who knew. So I'm inclined to believe at least those three dozen were killed, and quite deliberately. I mean, it was an act of, you know, group or mass murder.
Yeah, how do you think they did it? Do you think they just blew them up with explosives in the
building? Oh, yeah, it appears. Yeah, they were simulating. Right. They were simulating, so they, you know, they had to have explosives that were planted around there. Of course, April Gallup, you know, said she walked out.
She supposedly climbed out the wall of the...
Yeah, she walked out the hole. I know, and didn't see any evidence of any planes, just like Jamie McIntyre of CNN, when questioned by his anchor, you know, about the plane having crashed there. He said, well, you might think that, but from his close-up inspection, there was no indication that any large plane had crashed anywhere near the building. And, of course, he was pummeled for that, and actually, eventually, although he was an exceptional reporter, retired from news. I think the hypocrisy was just too great a burden to bear. You know, having to go on the air and lie. I don't think that was in Jamie McIntyre.
No, and you know the thing that stinks about the witness testimonies. And I'm not saying April Gallup isn't telling the truth. I'm just saying that you know that there's some people out there that weren't. So it makes it hard to believe all of them. You really have to really look at each one on a case by case basis and really look into what they're saying. I wanted to bring up another one. I mean,
Brian, hold up. We got to take our first break. Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal, with my very special guest today, Brian Stavely, talking about 9/11. We'll be right back. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal, continuing my conversation with Brian Stavely. We're hoping that we've got a better communication connection now. Brian, you wanted to say a few more words about the Pentagon before we turn to other issues.
Yeah, I just wanted to finish up with, you know, you think the death, at least some of them were real, like the budget analyst, because of the $2.3 trillion and all that. And you know, we have witnesses like April Gallup and stuff. And I was just saying, the thing that really stinks about 9/11 is it's hard to take any witness at their word, you know, without really, really, really looking into what they're saying, just because we know that there were some that were planted out there, like the Harley guy, which is, we both know, is totally ridiculous. You know, the Harley guy in New York.
Yeah, sure.
He comes out on Fox News, and he ends up saying, you know, oh, I saw both planes, and then I saw the buildings come down, mostly due to structural failure because the fire was just
right. Too I know and everyone's. I mean, everyone yeah. in the world scratching their head to try to figure out what in the world happened, and here he waltzes in front of the camera to explain it all.
Yeah, you know, and it's just total bullcrap. Especially when, okay, not only did this guy just supposedly see this all, I mean, he's given us the official story, and it's something that's never happened in the history of the world. I mean, that's never happened to a steel frame building. That's why they built them out of steel. Honestly, even if the crash sites weren't faked, and I'm not saying that because I believe they were all fake, even if they weren't faked, to think that, you know, an aluminum plane could cut through a steel or concrete building like that and take it down to the ground is ridiculous. I mean, that'd be like a mosquito in a screen door. I mean, it's absolutely absurd. And then there's even videos of the nose coming out the other side intact. You know, why don't we get into Flight 175 a little, Jim, because me and you differ on that a little bit.
Go for it, Brian. I'm glad to go anywhere you want.
I tend to believe that, you know, all the videos that we've seen of Flight 175 and the video we saw of Flight 11 in the Nardé Brothers film, were all fake videos. And I know that you think that at least, 175 was a hologram? Or do you think that both of them were a hologram? What was your final opinion on that?
Both of them. And the argument is fairly straightforward. I mean, look, you got three different theories. I of course, agree that some kind of video fakery was involved here, but there are three different ways in which video fakery can take place. One is you have real planes but fake videos. Another is you have fake planes but real videos. And the third is you have fake planes and fake videos. And I believe what's going on here is that we have real videos, but we have the image of a plane that wasn't a real plane. Now, the reason I arrive at that is we're talking about videos that show planes, which if they were real, were performing feats that would be impossible. For example, the effortless effort entry of 175 into the building with no collision effects. A real plane would have crumpled external to the building. It's actually intersecting with eight different floors, each of which is a steel truss filled with 4 to 8 inches of concrete, which would have created enormous horizontal resistance. It would have crumpled externally. Its wings would have broken off. Actually, it probably would have exploded because of the fuel in the wings, the tail broken off, body seats, luggage falling to the ground. Some of it would have entered the building, but those windows were fairly narrow intentionally and designed to keep the building from heating up so it wouldn't overstress the air conditioning. I mean, when you got a huge building like that, air conditioning is a major consideration. So the windows, I estimate, were probably less than or around 25% of the surface area of the external facade. So that might mean, you know, 75% of the plane should not have entered the building if you consider the glass, and it would have been impossible for it to have, you know, disappeared the way it's shown in the video. So we're seeing events that can't be true because they're violating elementary laws of physics, including Newton's first, second, and third law. Also, if you do a frame-by-frame advance, you can establish, in the case of 175, that there's no loss in velocity, that the plane passes through its own length into the building in the same number of frames it passes through its own length in air. So you got, you know, equal distance and equal times means equal speed. So the plane didn't even slow down. Well, that's quite absurd. Sometimes the Sandia experiment, where they had this you know, jet fire mounted on a railway car that was run by a rocket into a nuclear-resistant barrier at 500 miles an hour and blows apart into little pieces is supposed to show what happened. But the plane doesn't blow apart into little pieces. And the velocity of the Sandia plane went to zero. It did not pass through the concrete barrier. But in the case of New York, not only does it not blow into, you know, a zillion little pieces, it actually passes right into the building. It goes all the way into the building and then comes to a screeching halt. Get this now, Brian. The plane's 160 feet long. The building, its width is 208 feet, so that's 48 feet difference between the 160 and the 208, right? That means this yep. plane that effortlessly entered the building has to come to a screeching halt in 48 feet, and at 500 miles an hour, that represents a distance that would be covered in 56/1,000th of a second. I mean, it's completely preposterous. And then it waits to explode until it's all the way in the building. Okay, so clearly we're seeing impossibilities. And you agree with that. And the question is how it was done. Now, there are three different theories. One is computer-generated images, which has been advocated by Rosalie Grable. The second is a video compositing advocated by Ace Baker. And the third is the use of a hologram. Now, those that advocate a hologram include John Lear, our nation's most distinguished pilot, Stephen Grossman, who actually has written a book about the lack of collision effects for the building, and now a new student, Richard Hall from the UK, whose work we'll talk about in some detail. But the key consideration is this, Brian. If it was computer-generated images or video compositing, then no one would have had a plane to see prior to the videos. But there were a whole lot of witnesses, including a whole lot of firemen, who claimed to have seen the image of a plane before the plane or the image of the plane hit the building. Well, that's impossible. I mean, in real time. That's impossible okay. if it was CGA or video compositing. So that's the basic argument for the use of a hologram, but Richard Hall has given some very substantial supplemental arguments. Please go on.
My problem with this is, okay, you think the plane was a hologram and it was projected from another plane that was 1,400 feet to the side of it, correct?
Oh, well, that's what... I thought you wanted to deal with this first argument first. I mean, then we'll get into this Richard Hall argument, which I think is very impressive. Do you want to respond to my point about there wouldn't be any witnesses? There wouldn't have been any plane or image of a plane for witnesses to see if it had been CGI?
You're correct. There wouldn't be, if it was CGI, there wouldn't be any real witnesses. But again, I mean, it's really hard to believe some of these witnesses. I mean, because we know when we know for a fact there's guys put out there like the Harley guy and Kenny Joe Hanneman who supposedly was in the basement and heard.
Yeah, but Brian, this appears to include a couple hundred firemen. I also found one guy who I found quite credible, who had actually been working in the building. He'd been an employee in the South Tower for 2 years before, and he had been dealing with a power down, the first time I think anyone had ever heard of it in the South Tower. So he over the weekend, so he had the day off, and a friend of his called him from his apartment when he was in his apartment and said, "Take a look." And he looked out and he told me how he saw the second plane approach and enter the South Tower, and he said he was astonished when the building swallowed the plane. And he also said that when the South Tower was destroyed, it looked to him like it was turning to sand. You know, it was like a sandcastle dissolving. Now, that, in my opinion, gives him great credibility, where you can find the interview with him on the Real Deal archives at radiofetzer.blogspot.com. So I'm trying to...
Okay.
You know, I also...
If he was credible, that's fine. If he was or if he wasn't, that's not my question. My question is, you know, with all the witnesses that, you know, we're talking about, and never mind, you know, I'm not, without questioning their credibility, okay, never mind that. If the plane was a hologram that was projected from another plane 1,400 feet to the side of it, you don't think any of them would notice the difference in the sound of the flyover at all? They wouldn't notice that it was 1,400. I mean, they're not going to know, hey, that's 1,400 feet away, but they're not going to be able to tell that it's not right overhead. Wouldn't it seem a little fishy to some of them?
No, that's a bad argument, Brian. Look, let's talk about what Richard Hall established, okay? He obtained copies of, I think there might have been as many as 52 videos that have been taken of Flight 175. He studied them to determine if they would, you know, had useful information that would enable him to determine the position and location, the location and times of the image as it was approaching the building, okay? And he found about 27 that were useful for that. So he plotted a graph, you know, of showing where the plane was at the different times. He subsequently discovered that it may have been the NTSB had a similar chart with a similar locations and times that it claimed had been placed based upon radar data. He thought it looked funny because their chart for the radar data didn't look authentic. Now, what subsequently happened is he discovered there was another study that was actually based on radar data that showed a plane approaching the building, but it was 14 feet to the side of the original location. Therefore, he conjectures, and I think he's got to be right, that this plane 1,400 feet to the side, which had to be, you know, have been using some kind of stealth technology, it wasn't visible from the ground, was projecting the image.
What do you mean by that, though? You mean like cloaked, like invisible, like a Klingon vessel? Like, is that what you mean? Like, I mean,
why are you talking about Klingon vessels? I mean, it's common knowledge we have cloaking or, you know, technology that makes planes very difficult to see. You could have just painted it a color that would blend in with the sky that day. The point is, nobody saw this other plane, but it's on the radar data. Now, the radar data, it looks to be authentic for the following reason. If it's fabricated, it's ridiculous because it suggests there's a plane 1,400 feet to the side of where it's supposed to be, which contradicts the government's official account. So the government can't be giving us fabricated radar data, which contradicts its own account.
They could because most people take the official story for what it is, and the people that are looking into something like this, like we are, it's there maybe to throw you down that rabbit trail, you know? That could be a possibility. I wouldn't say that's impossible.
Brian, we're already down the rabbit hole. We already know this video is showing impossible performances by the aircraft. Do you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay,
absolutely.
So you agree there's some kind of fakery going on. You also agree.
Go ahead.
You also agree that if it were CGI or video compositing, then there wouldn't be any image or plane for the witnesses to report seeing.
I agree with that, but I don't trust the witnesses that say they saw the plane.
That's okay. You don't trust them. I say they appear to be too many, and I found this one guy who seems to be Scott Forbes is his name, by the way. Scott Forbes.
Mm-hmm.
He seems to me to be quite credible. Let me also say, by the way, that I also interviewed, I interviewed all these people on my show at different times, not all together, but on different occasions. And I also interviewed a fellow named Stephen Brown who'd actually recently completed a course on holography at Cambridge, who explained that, yes, the technology existed to project such a hologram at the time. Now, you put all this together, and I say, well, the most reasonable explanation, without going to extremes, which I consider you to be doing in this instance by wanting to discount all these witnesses, though you're logically entitled to do that, I just don't think it's a very reasonable thing to do, especially when I went out of my way to track down a witness that I regard as quite credible, and where what he said was very plausible when he said, he couldn't believe how the building swallowed the plane, okay? That's very telling. And when he said that the South Tower, when it came apart, it was like sand. It was like it was being turned into sand. That was also very telling. I mean, those are very important. Those are both very important observations. So
yeah,
I believe him. I believe him. You can listen to him, decide if you believe him. I believe him. Do you agree that if there's a single credible witness who reported seeing a plane before the videos were broadcast, that a hologram, then, is the only viable alternative explanation?
No, because Jim, like with Scott Forbes, you know, the guy you were just talking about, and you say he appears to be credible, he also talks about a power down the night before or whatever, and there was actually a music video that was shot on the roof of the World Trade Center on the day before, and it shows clearly that there wasn't a power down. So,
oh, no, come on. No, this was a couple days. This was like Friday, Saturday. He was working over the weekend. I'm sorry, Brian. I just think you're putting things together the wrong way. I don't know what more to tell you. This guy is very credible. There were other reports about a power down. That is not mythology. And I think you're just wrong.
You agree that the Pentagon crash site was fake, right? We agreed on that?
Sure.
Okay, and there were witnesses to that, supposedly. So how come...
No.
Fake witnesses there, but they can't be fake ones in New York.
Brian, I spent 3 hours going through the witnesses at the Pentagon with Mike Sparks. There were about 80 of them. And we went through each one of them, okay? And they either weren't in the position they claimed or they just weren't credible, okay? And we know what happened, and there was no evidence of a crash there and all that. Hey, we even know in New York that this can't be a real plane. You agree with that? It looks to me as though those cutouts, which appeared after the plane had already gone into the building, you know, that's very interesting because, in other words, the causal process that is supposed to be creating the cutout isn't taking place at the time it's supposed to be creating the cutout, but only shows up later. The plane's already in the building before the cutout appears. It only appears after all the smoke is cleared. So we see the plane half in and half out of the building. I mean, it's preposterous, and I know you agree with that. And it's just Yeah.
But if it's a hologram also, all the angles from all the videos should be the same, or relatively close to the same. You know, there will be different perspectives that people have. And there's some that are clearly very contradictory to each other.
No, you're wrong. You're wrong, Brian. With a hologram, you're going to get this from some angles. You may not be able to see it at all. And we have videos that show the left wing is missing. Now, how can that be the case? You know, I mean, obviously it means it's not a real plane. But the whole left wing is missing.
CGI or a hologram. That could be the case in either. I mean, couldn't it?
Listen,
we have a picture of that missing wing.
I have submitted from the beginning that the key differentiating feature between these three different accounts of how it was faked is whether or not there were any witnesses. I agree with that. And I have had people call up and just be so adamant about how they not only saw the plane, but they heard the plane, and how could that have been faked? And that's where Richard Hall, I think, has answered the question. It can be the case that they were hearing the real sound of a real plane. It just wasn't the plane that they thought the sound was coming from, but the plane that was projecting the image. I say, everybody, go online, look for this Richard Hall study. It's called 3D radar study of Flight 175. And look at it, because I think it's by far the most important missing piece of the puzzle as to how it was done in New York. And by the way, Brian, as you may know, when he studied Flight 11, he discovered the same pattern that the radar data showed a plane that was 1,400 feet to the side. And, of course, the plane that's being projected isn't on the radar at all. And that would make sense because it wasn't real. It wasn't a real plane. It wouldn't show up on the radar. But the real plane projecting the image 1,400 feet to the side does show up on the radar. And, again, I say it would be preposterous to create a radar that falsifies the government's account. I mean, the government wouldn't do that.
I don't know about that last part. I think we disagree on that, but that's fine. But it's not just the plane videos, though. It's actually there's videos of the buildings that just don't look right. The buildings are the wrong color. The buildings are leaning. The buildings look like they have no windows on them. There's a ton of pictures. If people go to the link that I posted there, just scroll down a couple, like especially the Jennifer Spell building where the plane's like 80% in the building before there's a hole. Okay, and then you look at and you can't even blame it on the resolution because the building in front of it has windows. I'm not saying there's no windows at all on any of the videos, but in most of them, they look like gray boxes. They don't even really look like the World Trade Center look like. If you look in older movies, like not recent ones, because they started the pre-programming and started putting CGI looking like buildings in movies, I believe. But if you look in some older movies, like the other day I was watching Trading Places with Eddie Murphy. I'm sure you've seen that with Dan Aykroyd a long time ago. Good, great comedy. They show the World Trade Center. There's other movies, you can find them out there, like from the 80s. And it looks like a black, glassy building. And in none of these videos does it look like that at all. None of them. And now we're talking about New York media. I mean, these people should have some of the best high-resolution cameras around. We're not talking about, there's definitely some amateur videos, too, but, I mean, even with those, I mean, it just doesn't look right. And then on top of that, that can be up to debate whether it doesn't look right or, you know, or it does. But there's videos like where they show in the daytime news, you see an explosion in the tower, and then in the nighttime news on the same channel, you see an explosion in the tower, and you see the plane now this time, except the whole background of the Hudson River and all the boats in it is missing. How does a hologram cause that to happen? That has to be a fake video. I mean, how does the Hudson River and all the boats just disappear out of the background unless it's a CGI video? How is that possible?
Oh, for the background to be wrong and all that? Yeah, Simon Jack talks about a lot of this.
No, I know he does, and I agree with some of their stuff, but I disagree with a lot of it, and those guys actually just went on attack on me yesterday, so I don't have anything
right now. Why were they attacking you?
No reason at all. Hoy Poloi made a post about me, and he said I'm a fictitious identity, I'm a sim, a fraud, all this, all that, for no reason, and we already went through this like 6-8 months ago over there, the day after I had Simon Shack on my show, and I was more than cordial to them, even after a week of attacks back then, and months have gone by, and then yesterday, or the day before I go on there, and you've got this big long post with a picture of me saying the picture's fake, and it was ridiculous. I posted 75 pictures of myself practically in videos, and they're over there drawing red boxes and all types of crap on it and saying that they're fake pictures of me and this and that. And I do agree with some of the victim stuff and some of the Photoshop victims. I do believe some of the victims are straight Photoshops because they totally look like straight Photoshops to me. I don't agree with all their work over there at September Clues, though, because I do think that some of it is purposely done wrong, so if they need to discredit themselves, and I think they're there to ultimately keep the media fakery in-house and discourage people like myself that have starting to get a voice and bring in the media fakery out to people's attention to discourage them away from their forum, and then what they've done. They actually banned me yesterday. They banned me. I'm not allowed to reply anymore, and they're still
on what forum?
On the Truthers and Shills forum. I'll get you the exact link right now.
The Truthers and Shills forum? There's a forum called Truthers and Shills?
Oh, yeah. When I went in there talking about somebody who I thought was a shill months ago, it was you know, the improper place to talk about it. They said this, that, and the other thing. And then these guys just go on the attack on me. And, Jim, I did nothing to provoke this. And he attacked me a few weeks ago, too. And I didn't even notice that one. But I'll get the exact link to you. And I'd like people to look at how ridiculous it is. And I even put videos of me up at the Celtics game, and it's clearly me. You know, I had a few beers. I'm singing, laughing. My friends there.
Ryan, I have no doubt you're a real deal, my friend. I have no doubt about that.
Well, I hope not. And I often, Hoy Poloi, call me on the phone. I put my phone number up there, or, you know, my Skype number up there for him to call. And he wouldn't take me up on the call. And they'll just continue to attack me. And I'm getting the link right now. It's actually pretty comical. The name of the thread is, "Do you literally think there are shills online?"
Okay, and Brian, we got to take a break. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal, with my very special guest today, Brian Stabley. We're talking about whether or not the videos in New York could have been completely faked, and we'll continue with that when we return. Jim Fetzer, your host, will be right back. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal, continuing my conversation with Brian Stavely, talking about 9/11, talking about New York, talking about video fakery, talking about how the video fakery was done. My producer actually sent me a chat suggesting that CGIs and holograms could be consistent, and I think that would be, you know, the hologram externally and then the CGI being done to create the video. I mean, that's my inference about what he was suggesting. So, I mean, maybe there was some mixing and matching going on here. I mean, the whole thing was such a fraud, Brian. Who knows? Could they have actually fake the videos? I mean, there's so much smoke coming out and all that. I mean, and so many bodies, so many people were jumping. All you think all that was fake?
I do. And I think if you actually analyze, you know, the videos, if you want, if we want to talk about the jumpers, and I posted a couple of pictures of them up on the site that I let link for everybody. I'll get that link back up there. But there's actually ones that you can see copies of others, and they're just flipped. And there's one with two people that are like 70 feet out from the building, and they're holding hands, and their feet are on fire. I mean, that's just ridiculous. How can they be so far out from the building? And then that same character that's holding the person's hand is actually flipped in another photograph and used as another jumper pick. And anybody that's listening, that can be found right here at this link. And then if you watch a lot of the videos of the jumpers that supposedly jumped, there's lots of them where their shadow disappears. There's a lot of anomalies with the jumpers. I mean, there really is. And then, Jim, the other thing I wanted to bring up is if it was a hologram that hit the building, like Flight 175 where it hit the building, okay, wouldn't it be kind of difficult for that other plane to fly at that low and throw that hologram and not have any other buildings get in the way or anything like that? I mean, that's pretty low for it to fly and do that, wouldn't it be?
I don't think so. That's a novel argument. I never heard that before. In fact, Richard Hall even explains why the plane had to fly faster than a Boeing 767 could fly in order to keep the hologram intact to be visually plausible from the ground, which makes great sense because pilots have shown, for example, that no real Boeing 767 could fly at that speed, at that altitude of between 700 and 1,000 feet, where it was traveling over 500 miles an hour. I mean, that's its cruising speed at 35,000 feet, but at this altitude, the air is three times more dense and starts functioning, you know, the turbines can't suck it through the engines fast enough, and they start functioning as brakes. So, no, I don't think there wasn't any building in between that I'm aware of that, you know, you got a novel one there on me, Brian. I'm not quite sure what to make of the point you're making.
Okay, and just one more thing, back to the Scott Forbes witness. There's actually tickets that prove people visited the observation deck that weekend when the power down supposedly happened. He said it happened Friday through Sunday, and that's also when that...
No. I think it was, as I recall, we could go back and listen, I think it was Friday night, and that he had to work over the weekend to restore the functionality to the computer systems and so forth over the weekend, so... No, I think you're distorting what he says. I think you really, Brian, if you're going to make an argument about Scott Forbes, you want to go listen to what he said. Have you done that?
I have, not to the extent that you have, but I had definitely listened to him a few times. Definitely. Definitely.
I mean, did you listen to him on my show?
No, I didn't listen to him on your show.
You've heard Brian Forbes on other shows. I see.
Yeah. Back to the hologram plane that you think was used, how do you think we would have, I mean, you really think the angles could be that different? I mean, there's shots where the plane's coming in straight. There's shots where it actually ascends, where it ascends. It comes in and it goes up. We're talking about Flight 175. And then there's actually shots where it comes in from all the way above the smoke line and comes down in line in what they call dive bomber shot. I know you know what that is. How do we have so many different angles if it was a hologram? Cameras pick up close to the same.
Why don't we turn that around? I mean, if it was a CGI, why wouldn't they have just one model and it could be perfect from every direction? I mean,
that's a great point, and I think that maybe, and just to throw people off again a little bit and confuse the hell out of people once they figure out that we...
Well, listen, I have not done what Richard Hall did. I have not gone through all the videos. He maintains that they're actually all consistent and you have one pattern of this plane on this approach and that you can plot the location of the plane and the time it was at that location using those videos. And personally, I'm inclined to believe this guy. You know, I mean, he seems to me to have done his homework, and certainly the theory that he espouses of the plane using the radar data, the plane projecting the image from 1,400 feet to the right sounds just right to me. I mean, I'm just telling you, the way I size up what was going on here, it seems to me that Richard Hall has found the missing piece of the puzzle. I mean, to me, it all fits, Brian. Now, you know, that's from the point of view of inference, what's known as inference of the best explanation. In other words, what hypothesis, if it were true, would confer the highest probability on all of the evidence? And it seems to me that hypothesis confers the highest probability on all of the evidence. Now, you're disputing the authenticity of some of the evidence, and that's terribly important. I mean, I spent all of 20 years now on JFK sorting out the authentic from the inauthentic evidence, and believe me, that case is just loaded with fabricated or faked evidence. And, of course, as you and I have already agreed, there's a lot of fabricated and faked evidence at the Pentagon. No plane, you know, crashed at Shanksville for sure, for all kinds of reasons we could review. But what was going on in New York is certainly challenging, you know, very difficult to sort out. I don't deny that. I mean, you might be right. I just don't, I'm not inclined to think you are right, but you might be right. I don't deny that you might be right.
Okay, but still, what's your opinion on why the buildings look so fake, you know, in almost all the videos? I mean, they really do. I mean, it looks like in some of the videos, it's insulting. There's movies that came out, like, I put a picture up earlier. I don't know if it's still up on my site, but like the movie Armageddon, which was, I believe, some pre-programming for 9/11 because it shows the towers on fire in almost the same spots that it happened 3 years later. But the quality of the images from that movie is so much better than the media quality of the cameras on 9/11. I mean, 2001 wasn't the dark ages of technology as far as video cameras go. I mean,
yeah. Well,
why did the towers just look so terrible? If people go to that link I put and scroll down and look at, like, the Jennifer Oberstein video, for instance,
yeah. You
have the Empire State Building leaning and the Twin Towers in the distance again, they look windowless.
Well, you're making a lot of interesting points. I mean, you know, I'd have to go back and review all that video evidence to confirm that, you know, what you're telling me is also what I see when I look at it. But, I mean, assuming what you're saying is accurate, Brian, that you do raise a lot of troubling questions about what we're seeing. And I do agree that in some of...
I'm sorry, I don't mean to cut you off.
That's all right. And I certainly agree that in some of the videos, the buildings ought to be more well-defined, and it's very peculiar. Why do you think they're not so well-defined as one would presume they ought to be? I mean, you know.
I think they're not well-defined because they were made with computer software, and it just wasn't as good enough to make maybe the reflections of the windows and the glass and everything correctly.
Uh-huh.
Maybe that's the best they could make it. But, I mean, some of it, I mean, like that Jennifer Oberstein video, and you guys can YouTube it. YouTube Jennifer Oberstein. She supposedly witnessed one of the planes. I don't remember if it was the first or the second that she supposedly saw. But her video, it looks like a Nintendo 64 graphics. I mean, it's ridiculous, Jim. I mean, the colors of the buildings, the Empire State Building is almost right in front of the shot. It looks so fake. It's leaning to the side. And again, I mean, the shot in the news where the Hudson River disappears when they have the plane hit the building on the same channel where when earlier they showed it, all you saw was an explosion. I don't see how that can be explained by a hologram. I mean, there has to be fake video being used. And then my other problem I have with the video is we both agree that New York is the media capital, if not of the world, at least of the United States, right?
Oh, of the world.
Okay, so New York is the media capital of the world. It would be thousands of reporters down there. I mean, at least hundreds, you know.
Yeah. With high quality equipment, I agree with all that. You're right.
Okay. Where is all the video of the people exiting the towers? Are you going to tell me that the place was so cordoned off and no reporter could get any video of all these thousands and thousands and thousands of people coming out, and no reporters would try and sneak around any barricades or anything like that? I mean, that would be like a Pulitzer-winning prize right there. That would be the honey shot that everybody wanted to get, is to get these people as they're leaving the towers. You're telling, and there's no video of that anywhere. I mean, you've got like one video of this couple that comes out of a doorway that they show covered in dust. And that's like the only video I've ever seen of people exiting the World Trade Center. I mean, that would be some of the most dramatic video out there, besides maybe the buildings actually coming down. It's these thousands of people being rushed out of there.
That's very interesting. I'm beginning to appreciate the reasons you have for being skeptical about. I mean, you agree the towers aren't there, right?
Absolutely.
And,
I think that's maybe the only real thing about the day is the towers are there before the day and the towers weren't there after the day.
Yeah, would you agree that the general pattern of destruction shown, namely that they're blowing apart from the top down, and that the North Tower is destroyed in about 11 seconds and the South in about 9, which is consistent with blowing one cube of 10 floors per second, because the North Tower was the full 110 floors, so you blow one floor, a cube of 10 floors per second, that's 11 seconds in the South. The top three cubes start to tilt over as one and we're blown, so that would make it 9 seconds for the South. Those are the times we get from NIST. So are you at least inclined to agree in general that the buildings were being blown apart in every direction from the top down, that they appear to have been converted into millions of cubic yards of very large dust, a very fine dust, apart from the parts of that were blown away from them. And when it was over, they were destroyed below ground level. Because I've had first responders confirm that that was the case, that were, you know, that there wasn't a pile of debris where the buildings had stood.
I agree that the buildings were blown up, but I can't agree that the buildings were blown up in the fashion that we saw on TV. How can I trust that when I can't trust these other videos where the buildings look so fake, you know? Maybe that's how part of the way they made them look so uniform and made them look like they came down so fast is because we were looking at a generated computer image. Let me ask you this.
Research that was done at the Vancouver hearings, which I co-chaired with Joshua Blakeney of Canada, we had two sessions on the Twin Towers and how they were destroyed. I had representatives, you know, on discussion of several different theories about how it was done, including, of course, a collapse theory, which is easily disprovable. Then the use of nanothermite, which doesn't have the explosive capacity to do the job. And then the idea of dews, which I'm sorry to say is very ill-defined. And then the use of mini or micro nukes, and there was a tremendous consensus, especially when you look at the chemical or elemental signature in the dust samples that were collected by the United States Geological Survey. Strontium and barium and cesium and a host of things that shouldn't have been there unless this was a nuclear event, that it was done using mini or micro nukes. Now, would you think possibly if it had been done with mini or micro nukes that the visuals would have been more dramatic? I mean, these are with a limited radius, you know. I mean, they're very destructive, but they can be done in such a way that they don't. This isn't a Hiroshima type explosion. They're very powerful, but they function in a different way, and they may even have been a special kind of a neutron bomb. But it still has, you know, the capacity to decimate those sections of the building. Is it possible that it was done using mini or micro nukes, and that therefore they had to substitute this fake footage to conceal it because otherwise it would have been too obvious?
I mean, nukes, they really need to go to that extent where they're going to let nukes go off in New York to take down a building? I mean, they could just blow it up with regular explosives.
No.
I tend to think that buildings were taken down. I'm not a demolition expert, okay? But whatever the technique they use to normally take down a building, those are very large buildings, as we know, at one time the largest in the world.
Right.
Whatever techniques they would normally use to take down a building, I think they probably used to take down those buildings. I just don't think that that's the video that we were shown, and I can't trust that video when all the other videos I see involving planes and explosions and everything else, the buildings just don't look real. I mean,
Brian,
there's really a problem with them, Jim.
Brian, have you compared the difference between Building 7 and the Twin Towers?
Yeah, Building 7, I'm kind of still up in the air on, you know?
What's there to be up in the air on Building 7?
Just the footage of it, if the footage is authentic or not. Just because
there's
other bullcrap footage out there with it.
Let me talk about the differences in the destruction of those buildings given the footage that we have. Okay, I understand your concerns about its legitimacy. In the case of Building 7, all the floors are coming down at the same time. You can actually even see the explosive charge around the side of the building to the top. You got this characteristic kink from taking out a major support column to ensure that it's not going to fall outward but come down in what's called its own footprint, meaning roughly into its own foundation. Now, when it's over, there's a stack of pancakes or debris, mostly the floor, is equal to about 12% of the height of the original. The original was 47 floors, and we have a height of pancakes there equal to about 5.5 floors. You can see it all over the place, all right? Now, with the Twin Towers, given the footage we have, all the floors are stationary in place. The buildings are blowing apart from the top down, and when it's over, there's no pile of debris. Now, take those as given. What that means is they're done in completely different ways. Now, I understand your talk about believing there's a fake video, you know, fake video fakery, and I'm trying to conjecture why it could, that might have been a desirable thing to do if, in fact, the way in which the buildings were destroyed, the Twin Towers, I mean now, not Building 7, would have been too revealing of the mechanism used because it was, in fact, these mini nukes. But, you know, what can I tell you? We have all kinds of footage of people running away from the buildings, too, and those don't look fake at all. And it seems to me...
But we don't have footage of them leaving the buildings, and that's very strange. Very strange. I don't think it'd be that difficult for them to film some running scenes on the street, maybe even a few years ahead of time. And, you know, those people might not even know what they're getting involved in. They might be think they're doing something for an upcoming movie for all they know. I mean, they, you know, they're just running down the street in New York for some other reason or whatever. But there's no video of the people actually coming out of the building, I think. It's astonishing. It's astonishing. This supposedly, and we know that this is an. We will think the number's a little exaggerated. They say there was 50,000 people in there. I don't think there was anywhere close. I actually, and there is some evidence backing it up that some of those companies that were allegedly in the towers. I mean, they're not. They weren't even listed in the occupancy report in the years that they say they were in the towers. I mean, it's. I don't know. I just have a hard time buying it.
Well, are you a Phil Jahan supporter of the empty towers?
Not at all. Not at all. I was at one point, but no, not at all.
And why not? Why did you abandon that if you once bought into it?
Because once I started talking about any fake video at all, he went on the attack on me. And then the day after I had Simon Shack on my show, and I'm allowed to have whoever the hell I want to have on my show.
Okay?
You know what I mean? If I can get you on my show, or I can get Simon Shack, or I can get, you know, any other name out there on my show, I'm going to do it. Because, you know, we're trying to get to the bottom of this thing, you know?
Yeah.
Whether I trust you, whether I trust somebody or not. I mean, it doesn't matter because we can, you know, we can hash things out or whatever. So I had Simon Shack on my show. They supposedly have this feud going on. And the day after, Phil Jahan went on an absolute attack against me. I mean, asking me if I wanted to go to warfare, this, that, and the other thing. Then it was pretty crazy, Jim. He actually accused me of choreographing 9/11 with Simon Shack.
Oh, come on!
Who I don't even talk to. Yeah, me. He accused me of choreographing it. He accused my family of helping finance part of it.
That's looping. I'm sure your family doesn't have the means, the motive, or the opportunity. How dumb. I mean, this is clearly.
You want to hear a good one? He actually tried to tell me that the town next to me, which has 30,000 people in it, only has 1,200 people, and it's a fake town, and they bus all these kids in there.
What town is that?
That's Drake and Mass, and the reason he picked that town is that's where the pilot John Oganowski was from, and I was doing some investigation into Oganowski's background, and if I would have uttered any word of that, you know, Drake it being a hollow, you know, basically hollow town, you know, bullcrap around here, I'd instantly discredit myself with everybody I know, and that's what he was trying to do. And then it got to a point where he said that he had a witness to the towers being hollow, you know, empty of companies, you know, back in the 70s or whatever. And he, after this whole week of attacking me, and I have every, you know, I mean, this guy really was way over the top. I didn't even respond to his attacks for a whole week. I produced a radio show over there called The Last American Radio Broadcast, and I would put him on the air when he wanted to come on, but usually it was me doing the shows. He actually had the gall to ask me, hey, I got this witness, Tom Dell'Oatta. He was a witness to the Hollow Towers. Can you put him on the air for me tomorrow? And I said, you know what? Sure, Phil. I'll talk to you tomorrow. And I didn't even want to talk to the guy. I went to bed overnight on his website, in his chat. He told everybody I declined. I told him, no, it's my fault. The show won't go on. And then you know, if it's so important, it's been like, you know, 9-10 months now. He would have already had this guy on the air. I went and checked out this guy's profile on Facebook. Looks like a totally fake profile. Nobody's commented on his page but Phil. And if he was that important, Phil knows how to set up a talk show. He's done it before. He would have had this guy on already, and he's advertised the show as having Tom Dell'Oatta, the witness, on. I sat there and listened to a whole two-hour show, and the guy never even showed up. And the guy just, he really went on the offensive at me for about months. It was months. You can ask a couple of the people, you know, like maybe my co-host, a couple other people. It was months. I mean, and you know, it was really ridiculous. I mean, claiming that I myself had a pot to do with choreographing 9/11 and the videos, and it was once I, and I appreciate you having a differing opinion than me as far as the holograms and the fake video and letting me come on and at least talk about it. Over there, once I brought it up, his whole attitude towards me changed. Before that, the guy wanted to be my best friend. He would talk to me on the phone all the time. The other guy always wanted to talk to me. He was so glad I was doing radio shows. Once I showed him a few videos that I had found from different channels on YouTube and stuff where things just didn't look right and I was showing him, he flipped out on me. It was crazy. So I am definitely not a Bill Kahan supporter, not at all. At one time, I was. I was at one time, but I do not support anything that comes from Let's Roll forums at all. And I did hear your show with him and Larry McWilliams back in the day about the Hollow Towers, and that's what kind of got me into his site. And yeah. I agree with some of the stuff that was done over there. There were definitely some legitimate researches.
Well, I'll tell you, he was very caustic about me when it turned out that I wasn't a true believer, that I hadn't bought into it. He was not very happy with me either. Listen, Brian, we're going to take our final break. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal, with my special guest today, Brian Stavely. We're hearing another point of view about 9/11. Very, very interesting. We'll be right back.
It's getting better all the time. I used to get mad at my school. Teachers that taught me weren't cool. Since you've been mine, getting so much. better all the time.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal, concluding my conversation with Brian Stavely. Brian, you've had some very interesting alternative points of view here. I want to give you the opportunity to say more of your piece, because I get the feeling you haven't had a lot of chances to do that.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that, Jim. I had a couple other points, is like, back to, some of the witnesses in New York. Like, we have, are you familiar with who Kenny Johanneman was?
Tell me.
He was supposedly in the basement with Willie Rodriguez, and it supposedly near the elevator that supposedly exploded, and he carried a man out that was totally covered in blood, and he carried him out to his rescue, and his like skin was melting off him or whatever. And you've got him giving these interviews out in the street, and he's got a totally clean white shirt on. And it's things like that that make it hard for me to believe the other witnesses in New York, you know. I know it seems like a reach to say that, you know, everybody's lying, you know. But it's really not that much of an impossibility. I mean, it's really not, especially when you know that there's a few of them out there, you know.
It really makes you wonder.
Do
you doubt the explosions in the sub-basements that occurred 14 and 17 seconds before the alleged impacts of the planes?
Well, I doubt the fact that there were people in the building whenever these explosions went off. I tend to think that the buildings were taken down at some point in the time frame that we were told, because that would make the most sense. But I don't think that these people were in there to witness the explosions in the basement, if that's where the explosions were. And the other thing is how the way the buildings came down from the top down is very, very strange, Jim. I mean, buildings usually don't come down that way.
Well, of course they don't. The reason was they had to destroy them by a novel technique so it wouldn't, the destruction wouldn't damage the bathtub, which would have led to Hudson River water flooding beneath Lower Manhattan and would have been catastrophic. I mean, it would have been extremely damaging to the most valuable real estate in the world, flooded the subway and the PATH train tunnels. They had to do it in a novel way, Brian, so they could convert the building mostly into these very fine particles that would remain suspended in the air so that the building would not come down and damage the bathtub. Now, about Willie, he came here to Madison. He gave a talk. I mean, I've met him on a couple of occasions. I've always found him very credible. Now, when we went to dinner after he spoke here in Madison, this must have been at least a year and a half, possibly longer ago. And he told me at dinner how he watched the sub-basement fill up with water. That's when I realized that a principal reason for that explosion was to drain the sprinkler system of water, because otherwise it would have been able to extinguish the very modest fires that remained after the, you know, whatever they had pre-positioned was consumed in the spectacular fireballs. So, you know, I mean, if those explosions hadn't happened, we wouldn't have the draining of the sprinkler systems, and we wouldn't have had the non-extinction of the very modest fires that remain. Plus, of course, we have the Lamont Laboratory run by Columbia University with a seismic signature from those two explosions. There are two guys, I don't know if you've ever read their report, Gordon Ross and Craig Furlong. Their study is entitled Seismic Proof, 9/11 Was an Inside Job. These guys are very thorough and meticulous. I think based on their work, there isn't any doubt that there were these sub-basement explosions. And I think they had a very important function. And that's what caused the damage to the lobbies, by the way, of course, was the sub-basement explosions. Does any of that compute for you?
I mean, some of it makes sense. But then again, you know, when you look into Williams, some of his story, I find it very, very hard to believe. I mean, he's got, in part of his story, you know, he's doing all these amazing feats within like 45 minutes, and he supposedly was in like a caged elevator that was filling up with water, and then, you know, he dove out of underneath a fire truck, and I forget exactly which ladder he said it was in, like ladder 12 or whatever, and there's actually pictures later on that we found, and I don't have that handy, but I will try and dig that up tonight, of that same fire truck being pulled out of a different spot, and it's not even crushed. And this is supposedly where this guy dove underneath to stay, you know, from the building coming down on top of him. I find him a little hard to believe, and I've spoken to Willie myself. I've spoken to him on the phone a couple times. After the whole Phil Jahan thing started, Willie wanted to contact me because they have their little beef, so he wanted to talk to me about that. We didn't get too much into his story, but I don't know, man. I have a hard time trusting Willie Rodriguez. I do, and I mean, I know you've met him personally, so it's, you know, you might find that a little, you know, offensive or whatever, but I can't trust Willie. And there's some other videos out there too, like from 9/11 of, you know, this window washers washing the building, like, right in front of the World Trade Center, after it's already allegedly been hit by an airplane, and it's got a hole in it from the airplane, it's smoking and gushing, and these guys aren't even like packing up to work for the day, and they're still sitting there washing the windows on the building in front of it when a terrorist attack just happened on the tower behind them. I mean, I think that's a bit ridiculous. I have another question about the hologram theory of yours, though, Jim.
Yeah, go ahead.
If they did use a hologram, and let's just say that's totally feasible, and they could do that technology, like you said, what the hell started the fires in the building, and who started them?
They had previously positioned. I mean, this is special effects. This is Hollywood stuff, Brian. Do you think when Rambo attacks that North Vietnamese prison camp and there are explosions going on all over the place and blood is spewing off of all the North Vietnamese guards and all that stuff that he's actually killing all those people? I mean, you know.
No, I don't.
Well, the screen, you know, they'd have a hard time recruiting actors and the Screen Actors Guild wouldn't stand for it. I mean, you know, this is just special effects stuff. They had previously positioned explosives to set off when the images, you know, were in the right place. I mean, the mere fact that the planes could go all the way into the buildings before they explode is a sure sign that this is fraudulent, that this is fake. The fuel's in the wings, it would have exploded as they were entering or crushing up against the building. Most of it would have been external, not internal. Especially when you're talking about an angle of, you know, intersecting with eight different floors in the South Tower and seven in the North.
Okay, so we definitely disagree on you know, how the fakery was pulled off as far as the CGI versus the hologram. We agree on a lot of things. There's something I asked you before. What do you think about some of the victims in the towers being made-up entities and some of their pictures being photoshopped? Because there's some very obvious ones. Now, there's some ones that I definitely don't agree with that are floated out there, like by people like Simon Shack, like you said. But there's some stuff that is definitely very credible there also, some that are very, very obvious. And what family would ever stand for that instead of just sending in another picture to the media, which is very easy to do in the 21st century now? You know, with email and everything, you just send an attachment, send a photo to somebody. You wouldn't take somebody's picture and crop off their head and body and put it in a different scenery and to make it like another point in their life. And that seems to have been done with a lot of the victims. Why would they do that? And if they did that with some of them, why is it not a possibility? Maybe they did it with most or all of them.
Well, that's certainly a big lie. I mean, you know, I mean, it's already a big lie. You're making it even more, you know, an even bigger lie by faking an awful lot of most of the victims. Do you think anybody died on 9/11?
In my personal opinion?
Yeah.
No, I don't.
Really?
I don't. I think the whole thing was a huge media hoax. Just like you were saying a minute ago, it was Hollywood.
Yeah.
I think the whole thing was Hollywood. And also, if you don't kill 3,000 people, then you don't have the 3,000 families to worry about breathing down your neck at all. It makes it a lot more feasible. I know it seems, you know, so impossible of a hoax to pull off, but I mean, it's really not, especially when the Twin Towers are at the tip of an island. They could easily cordon off that area. The only part that I'm trying to still figure out is, you know, how they, you know, got people out of the area without, you know, asking questions. But that could have been done with that gas leak story. It could have been a fire alarm. It could have been anything to get other people out of there. And that's why I think they also did the first attack at 8:43 in the morning, because the observation deck didn't open till 9:30. So you didn't have to turn away tourists at all, because you would already have the place cordoned off. So you don't have that to worry about, third-party people showing up there and trying to get into the towers. No, sorry, the towers are closed. They've just been hit with an airplane, you know what I mean? And I think they did use some, you know, I do think it was total CGI on TV, but there was some form of physical fakery for people that would be in New York, you know, as far as maybe smoke in the building, or did they blow a real hole in the building? I don't know that, you know, but...
Well, you know, there are a couple of alleged plane parts that are clearly fake. The engine at Church & Murray, for example, appears to have been planted there by the FBI. Jack White, who died recently, a wonderful guy, great researcher, discovered Fox News footage showing a white van there and persons in FBI vests unloading something heavy. It was found underneath a steel scaffolding. And the sidewalk was undamaged, whereas if something that massive had hit at high velocity, it would have shattered the sidewalk. No signs of that. And it wasn't even an engine component from a 767. So how bad is that, you know?
I agree. I totally agree. The engine on the street story is bullcrap. I mean, they're going to say this thing went through the towers. And, you know, all the steel and the concrete and the trusses of the floors and everything came out the other side, and it doesn't even leave a dent in the street. I mean, it's just sitting on the street. Like, you'd think there'd be this massive pothole from this huge titanium engine, you know, flying down. I agree with that. But what's your opinion on some of the victims maybe being photoshopped, and have you looked into these pictures yet?
It's not an area that I've been exploring, but, you know, it's possible. I mean, I'm not going to rule it out. I'm a big tent kind of guy. I think we have the greatest success in discovering the truth by allowing all points of view to be introduced, looking at all the evidence and trying to figure out what happened, which is one of the reasons why when I organized the Vancouver hearings, I invited both Simon Shack and also CIT to come and make a presentation, and both of them declined, which I thought was very disappointing. I mean, I also invited, you know, representatives of the thermite sniffers, you know, the Steve Jones, Kevin Ryan. I invited Richard Gage to come. I invited both Judy Wood and John Hutchison to come. John actually accepted before Judy reined him in. Richard Gage actually made an effort to undermine the hearing by telling two key players on the ground in Vancouver that he wanted them not to cooperate with us. I find that quite despicable. I've never felt the same about Richard Gage since I heard that. I may think that A&E runs a pretty superficial operation. They get a huge amount of publicity, but they don't go very far. Or they focus on Building 7 and the Twin Towers, which is fine as far as it goes, but they don't even talk about how it was actually done. They just show that it wasn't a collapse. And that's all well and good, but that's like baby steps, you know, like that's like the freshman course. I'm more interested in the graduate seminar, how all this was done, who was responsible, and why, which is what we did at the Vancouver hearing. So, you know, I'm not
hey,
all
Jim,
that.
Here's an interesting point, right? You messaged me on Facebook earlier, and that's a good platform to, you know, try and get information out. I know you use it. I use it. That's how I've met a lot of people in this game. I'm sure you have too. It's been, you know, has its good things and its bad things. But you see people post all kinds of crazy crap all day. I mean, people will post real news story, you know, real stuff. People will post pictures of kittens. People will post joke Hallmark cards. People will post videos of their kids at soccer games. How come every 9/11 anniversary, our newsfeed isn't flooded with all these families posting videos of their children or their husbands that died in the towers at the World Trade Center? Even stupid videos like they have, you know, just a video of them, you know, doesn't have to be at an airport or anything or at work. I mean, a video of them playing soccer or a video of them driving their car or a video of them at a birthday party.
Yeah.
You should see tons of this on the anniversary of 9/11.
Yeah.
And especially me. I mean, I only live 250 miles from there or so. I don't see any of it. None of it. You never see any videos of these people. I find that rather odd. Don't you think that's rather bizarre?
I do. I think that's a very interesting point, Brian. I do. That's very interesting. And in Scholars in 2006 already, I had one member who did a study about the 19 or so who had allegedly made phone calls, maybe it was 16, from the different planes altogether. And he studied the Social Security Death Index and the Survivors Fund benefit. And he found of all of those who had allegedly made these phone calls, only one had their name listed in the Social Security Death Index, and none of their families or survivors had received any money. None of them. And
entitled for $2 to $3 million. And it's only $2 to $3 million on the table.
It's un-American to not take free money from your government.
Anybody would. And especially when you lost the maybe bread maker, quote unquote, in your family, the person working in the World Trade Center. Now you're out that their income. And the government's going to give you free $2 to $3 million, and you're not going to collect it. And then on top of that, you know, if you go into the Social Security Death Index, and I don't know how much they've changed it since people have been looking, but when you know, and I've tested it myself, you could put, say, 10 of your, you know, God bless them, dead relatives, you know, grandfathers or whatever, you put all their names in there. They're all going to come back, at least 9 out of 10 of them. And when you take a list of 9/11 people, and I've taken, like, you know, 25 to 50 people, put their names in there individually, I got, like, one name back. I mean, and it comes out to a total of, like, only a couple hundred people out of, you know, what, 2,800 and something supposed people that died or whatever. Only a couple hundred of them show up in the Social Security Death Index. And this is after years and years and years. And this is something that's, you know, almost always totally reliable, like over 90%. I think it's you know, when you look at that, you look at the fact that there's no videos of these people coming out of the towers. You look at the fact that a lot of the videos of the buildings don't look right. And you look at the fact, like I said, like every 9/11 anniversary, your Facebook feed and other sites or whatever isn't flooded with memorials and tributes to these people, tribute pages, videos of them when they were younger, pictures of them when they were younger. And then when you get more into some of the victims, and some of them, there's definitely some photoshopping and photo alteration going on. It's really got to make you question the whole thing, in my opinion.
Well, I think there are lots of reasons for questioning the whole thing. I agree with that. I mean, the whole thing is a Hollywood-style special event and special effects event. And, you know, so I'm not going to be dismissive of your position about this, Brian. And I'm glad to have you on to talk about it because it seems to me very rare that there's any opportunity to discuss it at all. So I think it's good.
Oh yeah, no, I'm very grateful that you had me on, and you know, and you gave me another audience to speak to you. By the way, you know, when we're all done with the show, anyways, how long is it usually before your producer has it up at the archive, and where can people find that?
Well, it's at radiofetzer.blogspot.com, and I think it's pretty near to current now, so it might well be within a couple of days, Brian. But it's at radiofetzer.blogspot.com.
Okay, that's excellent. What else was the other thing that I wanted? I had something else on my mind I wanted to ask you. Did you have anything you wanted to ask me? I mean, we got like 8 minutes left or whatever.
No. Less. No, I'm just interested in making sure you have the chance to, you know, identify all the issues that have been of concern to you. There is a new video out there about the motives, the financial aspects of the hit on 9/11, if I could remember the title. I'll see if I can search it right now, but it's a really, really quite good video, although it's got a little silliness right at the tail end about dues, where I supported for many years, you know, Judy Wood's research. I think she has done the best job of collating all the evidence that we need to explain, with the exception that she really doesn't ever look at the dust evidence collected by the U.S. Geological Survey, which turns out to reflect, you know, strontium and barium and cesium, a bunch of stuff that wouldn't be there unless it had been a nuclear event. Maybe that's why she left it out. I don't know. She didn't do much by way of, you know, dealing with the possibility that this could have been a nuclear event. But nevertheless, I wasn't supporting directed energy weapons so much as I was supporting alternative points of view. And I think it's terribly important that we consider all the different points of view and then evaluate them in relation to the available evidence.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, well, I totally agree with that. You have to look at everything. I mean, you can't rule anything out until you look into it. And I spent a good, I don't want to say a month, I'd say probably a few weeks, with what a lot of hours, you know, looking into Judy Woods. And I just... She really doesn't really have that much strong evidence. I really didn't, you know, buy into her theory. And when I talked to her on the phone, I called her to a radio show that she was on, and it was late night in the Midlands, I believe. I called them. The archive to that is also up on my site at therealnewsonline.com. I called her and asked her some specific questions, and she really seemed to kind of beat around the bush a little bit. And she calls everything that she has as evidence, and none of it's theory, and like everything I was saying is theory, and it was really kind of the other way around. Everything she was saying was more or less based on theory, and I'm not saying that that type of technology doesn't exist, but I mean, there's just no evidence of it. You know, she has this video of the steel spire, which could very well be just fake video, as you know that I've been trying to drive home that point. And then her evidence of these cars that she wants to call toasted or whatever, all the ones I saw had no license plates on them, which I found very suspicious. Made me think that they were just, like, towed there from a junkyard, and, you know?
Hey, yeah. Hey, I found the video that I recommend. It's called Black 9/11, Money, Motive, Technology, and Plausible Deniability. I think this is very good. Black 9/11, Money, Motive, Technology, and Plausible Deniability is about, 39 minutes long, I think. It's certainly worth watching. I think it's particularly excellent about all the reasons why they might have staged the events, attacked Building 7 and the Twin Towers, too. I think that's very much worth watching. So let me recommend that for everyone. Brian, we only have less than 2 minutes left, actually. So if there's anything you'd like to add about where to go to your website, what to, learn more about your views, all that. You got programs archived somewhere. Please just mention for everyone.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And I'll put my link up in the chat for everybody. My website, guys, is therealnewsonline.com. If you go there, It's pretty easy to find the archive because you'll see a page that says Radio Archive. And if you go there, every show I've ever done is there in order of the dates that they were done, and they're all labeled on what we were talking about. And if I had a guest on, it's written in big blue text so you know which show was there. Jim was on my show on, I believe it was September 24th of this year. So if you scroll down a little bit, you'll see the show with James Fetzer. That's a great one that I'd like you guys to listen to. Listen to my call to Judy Wood. Even go down farther and listen to some of the other 9/11 shows we did. Especially, I'd recommend there's actually a couple pages that have their own page because, like I said, you need the visuals and everything. There's one that we did on this anniversary of 9/11, and then there's another page on my site called 9/11, The Hoax Uncovered. And if you go to the page, the audio files are right there at the top. You just press play and open in a new window and just follow along with the evidence. And I think, you know, we do a pretty good job presenting our case. And I do my own radio show. I'm actually on the air tonight at 10 p.m. Eastern Time. And I'm on as many Wednesdays as I can. It's not every
Wednesday.
Okay,
give us a final word. Where do they find your radio show? How do they find your radio show? Then we got to wrap.
www.therealnewsonline.com. And it's on the page that says Dose of Reality Radio.
Brian, I want to thank you for being here. Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal, thanking my special guest, Brian Stavely, for being here, and all of you for listening.